If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Phil Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Coming up in this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast to celebrate the return to national road racing with the Women's Cycle Classic. Sean Botley of Team Brother UK Onform tells us why racing on home roads offers more than a slight advantage.
It really, really does help knowing the course as well. I consider myself quite lucky that it is a lot of my home training roads. The luck element does play a part of it, but I'm quite a firm believer in you make your own luck in races like this. And if you have got the extra technical ability to be able to pick your way through the tricky sections, then yeah, you are less likely to run into trouble.
Colin Clues, the Cycle Classics founder and race director, hints that the biggest ever field for a British women's road race might not stay together for long.
We may start with a bunch of 140, but within perhaps the first 20 kilometres, we won't have a bunch of 140 any longer. It'll be several smaller bunches. The more spread out we get the riders, then the greater the racing looks, because it actually demonstrates the real challenge of the event. But everybody wants to be in there, and they're there at the start. Let's see how many we've got at the finish.
Manager Tony Barry explains why the Cycle Classic is the busiest day of the year for neutral service powered by Brother UK.
We'll have four bikes on the car, various sizes, and then inside four pair of wheels, and then up on the roof rack another six pair of wheels. The Cycle Classic is the only one that we've gone through 40 wheels in one event.
Larry Hickmott, the founder and editor of VeloUK.net, describes his preparation for on-the-spot coverage of the return to national road racing this weekend.
It's the biggest race that we've had for well over a year. There's a lot of pressure and a lot of different things to cover. I have already looked at the course, and I do have a strategy of the number of times that I can see the race, which I think is roughly 7 to 8 times, and then get back for the finish.
And Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK and this podcast's co-host, shares his excitement for the long-awaited return of national road racing on a course more than equal to the occasion.
Can you imagine what the riders must be thinking right now? You've not had a race for so long, and all of a sudden you're coming back to one of the most epic courses that the domestic scene has to offer as your first race back. So they're going to be really excited. I'm excited, and I hope that everyone listening to the podcast will be excited to see who will emerge as the winners on Sunday.
Hello and welcome to this 11th edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast. Today I'm joined by my co-host Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK, to look ahead to this weekend's return to national road racing in the form of the Women's Cycle Classic. We'll hear throughout this episode from the people at the heart of this brilliant race, from Team Brother UK on-form rider Sean Botley, who'll be racing on home roads, from race director Colin Clues, from Tony Barry, the manager of the neutral service powered by Brother UK in-race support crews, and from Larry Hickmott, the founder and editor of Brother UK-sponsored VeloUK.net, who'll be covering the race live on Sunday. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me. I know that you're as excited as I am by this race.
Indeed I am, Tim. And can you imagine what the riders must be thinking right now? You've not had a race for so long, and all of a sudden you're coming back to one of the most epic courses that the domestic scene has to offer as your first race back. So they're going to be really excited. I'm excited, and I hope that everyone listening to the podcast will be excited to see who will emerge as the winners on Sunday.
I mean, this is no gentle reintroduction, as you say. This is an epic race. For people who haven't seen it, the women's and the juniors edition of the Rutland Melton Cycle Classic is a race that starts and finishes in Melton Mowbray, but which, like the men's race, takes in some of the most demanding lanes in the surrounding countryside and passes through the village of Euston multiple times. It's an essential part of the domestic calendar, but with a heavy continental influence. If you can imagine the Strada Bianchi or the Tour of Flanders or even Paris-Roubaix set in rural Leicestershire, well, you won't go far wrong. The road constantly rises up and down, it twists left and right. Colin Clues, the race director and founder who we'll hear from later in this episode, well, he jokes that only he and a handful of volunteers actually know the full route, and he says that the teams complain every year that they don't know exactly what route they'll be following until they're actually riding the race. I mean, it could not be any more challenging. Brother UK, well, we'll be absolutely at the heart of this race, and for four very good reasons. The first three of those are our sponsored teams: Brother UK Team Onform, Brother UK Team LDN, and Brother UK sponsored Crimson Performance Orientation Marketing. Perhaps most importantly of all, we'll be represented by the neutral service powered by Brother UK in-race support crews, and the Cycle Classic is by some distance their busiest race of the year. Tony Barry, as we've mentioned, well, he manages the whole neutral service setup as a former rider, a former Team GB road manager, and even formerly a board member at British Cycling. Well, there isn't much that Tony hasn't seen in elite bike racing, and he gives the Cycle Classic a ready thumbs up.
It is a unique event, the Cycle Classic, in that Colin Clues, the organiser, modelled it on the Paris-Roubaix. I would say in some sections of the race, it's worse than Paris-Roubaix. Depending on the weather, one of the bad places where people need service is on what we call the Summerberg. And one particular year, it was so bad, we couldn't go across there because of the mud. We lost a couple of motorbikes and in that they weren't able to get up a climb. One of our mechanics was on the back of the motorbike. And in the end, when we came back to the changing rooms, he went in where the riders are, in full leathers, and just went straight in the shower and showered himself off. There was that much mud. I think it's a good event. It's hard work, but it's good fun. And looking at the entries, the riders love it, which is the important part. I think if the riders didn't like it, you wouldn't get your entries. We'll have four bikes on the car, which are the various sizes. And then inside, we'll run with four pair of wheels. And then up on the roof rack, we've got another six pair of wheels. The Cycle Classic is the only one that we've done it. We've gone through 40 wheels in one event. And sometimes with the Cycle Classic, we put a static service and pick up wheels that we'll get rid of our punctured ones and take on new ones. Luckily, there is three cars, so there's quite a lot of wheels there. But we have gone through all of them in men's race.
Well, there's the first of several voices that we'll bring you in this episode from inside the Cycle Classic. Tony Barry, the manager of Neutral Service powered by Brother UK. And Phil, I know that you bow to no one in your admiration for the skill and dedication of Tony's volunteer drivers and mechanics. These are people who do full justice to our at your side motto, aren't they?
Yes, indeed, Tim. And I've obviously been very lucky to experience that firsthand by being in the passenger seat in a number of races in the neutral service vehicle. And every time I have that experience, I'm really in wonder at just the sheer amount of preparation, planning, concentration, and cognitive load, particularly the drivers are under when they're supporting any race. This particular race, I think, brings with it an additional set of variables, given the very narrow lanes, the parkour, and actually, historically, it is one of the races which has the most technical incidents of any of the races on the calendar as a result. So they're under a huge amount of pressure and there's just problems happening all the time with race radios going, you know, two race radios in the neutral car. Then you've got technical failures. You're constantly moving wheels about. You're trying to figure out what kit is where. People are wanting bottles, nutrition, and you're trying to drive the vehicle down very narrow lanes whilst all that is going on. It's a real skill.
Well, that summary, Phil, is absolutely spot on. I mean, it's beyond demanding, isn't it? Firstly, you have the driving challenge. And I often think, you know, that if you put, quote, a civilian in the race convoy, i.e. a motorist from outside of the world of professional cycling, well, you know, disaster would pretty soon strike. You know, the speed with which these drivers have to navigate the course and the convoy, and then, you know, their proximity to the riders, it's hugely impressive. The vast majority of drivers in the convoy, they're former riders, of course, which gives them that sixth sense for, you know, the positioning of the riders on the road. And then additionally, in the case of Tony's drivers, they're either certified by professional motoring organisations or by the sport's world governing body.
All of our drivers are either Institute of Advanced Motoring, and they will have also done the UCI driver's accreditation, or as we call it, grandfather rights, where you've been doing it for years. I am one of them particular guys in that I have been away with teams all over the world, and you get used to being with the riders and you are aware of them. That is the most important thing I say to all my drivers, is the rider. We don't want a rider on the floor. That's the worst thing you can do. Even if it takes you 20 minutes to do a wheel change, yeah, I'm sad that's happened, but if we touch a rider, that's the worst you can do. All of our drivers are thinking like that. We have our three cars, one out front, which is to service any brakes that develop, one at the very back, which will be for anybody who goes off the back of the main peloton, and there is a group that forms, they will look after them. And then the number one service, as we call it, which will be in behind the main peloton, behind the chief commissaire. We will do the riders that are requiring wheels that don't have a team car in there. We normally keep a record of where team cars are, because there will be times when a team car will go up to the brake and maybe feed the riders or give them bottles. While they're away, we'll look after the riders. And then when that team car comes back to the main peloton, our neutral service out front will take care of all the riders in the brake if they don't have a team car. The same applies off the back.
Well, good to hear there, Phil, that Tony's drivers are trained and certified to the highest standards. Driving a neutral service car, or indeed any vehicle in the race convoy, is no cakewalk, is it? I mean, you've got to know what you're doing, or riders are going to get hurt pretty quickly.
Without a doubt, Tim. If you've never been in a team car or a neutral service car in a race, it generally is a roller coaster experience, because you do not realise the driving skill that these individuals have, because there are gaps that they sometimes go through at such speed. Me as a normal driver, I would not go through those gaps. But this, of course, is what happens in a race. And there's certain race protocols about where riders sit, where drivers pass, when they don't pass, you know, where everybody sits on the road to ensure optimum safety. But you cannot believe the sheer speed at which you go firing through some of these villages, chasing riders, and particularly on some descents as well, the speed that you're going down some descents, because you've got to be aware of not only the positioning of where you are on the road relative to riders in front, but actually riders behind. So you've got to be on the front, you've got to be looking in the rear view mirror, in the side view mirrors, you've got your mechanic also looking out and being an extra set of eyes and ears for you. It's incredible the situational awareness that you need in order to perform at the highest level in a race environment.
I like that phrase you use, Phil, cognitive load, the sheer amount of thinking that goes on. Tony's got two races in the car, one of them tuned to the race radio that the entire convoy can hear, and then a separate channel tuned to the commissaire. If you think of the race convoy as a game of chess played out at 60 or 70 miles an hour, it's the commissaire who's moving the pieces, and Tony and his crews have to be ready to be moved at short notice. I mean, it's a huge intellectual weight, isn't it? Quite aside from the physical demands of manoeuvring a car at that speed.
It is, Tim. And very interesting, I recently read a book by a helicopter trauma consultant. And what he was discussing was actually, how do you make sure that you prevent mistakes happening when you are under tremendous pressure? The learnings from that book are directly transferable to the interior of a team car, which is the driver is under tremendous cognitive load at any one point. They're trying to control a vehicle, deal with messages, dealing with people coming to the window, thinking about their positioning on the road. And so therefore, inside a vehicle, what you'll soon realise is that you have to have what's called a sort of quiet cockpit in the same equivalent terms, which is you've got to allow the driver to do the driving and to allow them to have the mental capacity to deal with all of this information and process that information. So when you're lucky enough to be a passenger, perhaps like I am, you realise you don't speak unless you're spoken to. You don't create unnecessary chatter other than perhaps, do you want a Haribo? That's about it. A hand will come over, grab a big handful of Haribos. Everyone gets munching. But when the race is perhaps a little quieter, then the conversation might start and there'll be a bit of a chatter, etc. But you soon realise when the switch goes back on again, you just need to know when to be quiet in order that individual can really focus on driving the vehicle and keeping the riders safe, most importantly.
Tony makes that point again and again in this episode. Rider safety is the number one priority for Neutral Service powered by Brother UK.
The most important thing is the safety of the rider. That's what we all want. Nobody wants a rider down, and certainly not one of us taking them down. And the riders, they're not as daft as some people think. They know where they're going and they'll let you know if you're in their road. Often you'll hear a thump on the back of the car that there is a rider there. There is small blind spots on all cars. I'm sure you know as a driver that you can get a blind spot. And that's what you've just got to be aware of, that there's where are the riders and what is going on. Just keep your wits above normal. That's what I would say. And it takes time to become one of those drivers, I think, which also helps if you've been a rider, because you know the way a rider will go through a bend. You don't start overtaking one on a right-hand bend because he's going to come over to the right-hand side of the road. And you learn that.
So there's Tony again, this time making an obvious but valuable point that nothing matters as much as rider safety, even the speed of the wheel change. And of course, in that regard too, they're operating at levels far superior to those of you or I, amateurs who might change a wheel at our leisure in the privacy of our garage at the weekend. The mechanic is out of the car and at the rider's side before you can blink. But, even then, the priority is safety. They don't want to approach the rider at a speed or, in a manner that might put anybody at risk. It's not just the neutral service drivers, though, is it, Phil? I mean, the drivers of the team cars, they're operating to similar standards. I remember you telling me about a particularly memorable trip in the Vitus Pro cycling car at a recent edition of the Tour de Yorkshire.
Yes, that was a real demonstration of what driving skills a DS needs to have. And that was at the time where Sherry Pridham, obviously now at World Tour level, I was in the team car at the Tour de Yorkshire with the Vitus Pro cycling team that we sponsored. When the car got a puncture, which is one of those freak things, car got a puncture in the convoy. We pulled over, we had two cars, we had to wait for team car two to come. Team car two came up and the bunch was about 3 miles up the road at this point. We'd gone outside of the bubble. So then the bubble had moved on, which means the roads were no longer closed. And so Sherry then had to drive to catch up. So that was a very, very precarious drive, as you can imagine. What it demonstrated to me was A, her driving skills, which were absolutely immense, but the concentration that she needed in order to execute those driving skills and the understanding of the handling of the car. I mean, she was taking bends at speeds that I would never take in my own vehicle. We got back into the bubble and actually into our convoy position. And she just looked over at me and I was kind of like, white. I was like, Sherry, I've never seen anyone drive a car like that. That was incredible. It was like being on a racetrack. And I really, really that day got taught just how capable those individuals are when they're behind the wheel.
It's amazing, isn't it, how much of that drama is completely missed by the television coverage. You absolutely have to be there. And that's why we're delighted to offer one lucky winner the chance to join Tony Barry's cruise inside a neutral service powered by Brother UK support vehicle at the Lancaster Grand Prix on August the 15th, 2021. Simply follow the @BrotherCycling Twitter account and like and share any of our posts made this Sunday during the Women's Cycle Classic to be in with the chance of an unforgettable ride. There's one huge additional challenge at the Cycle Classic, of course, which is the width of the roads. You know, much of this race is held on very narrow country lanes. So however high the standard of driving is in other races, it's a level above at this one, isn't it?
The problems that narrow roads bring are that effectively the convoy can't really operate as normal because it gets strung right out. So on a single track lane, of course, you can't have cars side by side. The speed is often much slower, dictated by the slowest rider of the bunch, which means the bunch can get strung out very, very quickly. And then, of course, you've got convoy positioning, which is normally dictated by draw before the race. So the DSs will be very, very keen to try and get a convoy position as close to the front as they possibly can, because that will mean that they can attend to their rider very quickly. Because if you're in convoy position 15 of 20 vehicles, then effectively, if one of your key riders has got a problem, really you're going to have to rely on neutral service to service that rider, because by the time that you get to them, the bunch could well be away and the race is basically over. So neutral service provision, particularly on this race, is very, very key given the width of the lanes and also the parkour that they're racing on.
Yeah, mixed surface, I think, is the current euphemism. You and I, of course, would call them country lanes. You've got to be at your best, of course, as a driver, but also as a rider. I mean, this is a race that tests every aspect of a rider's ability. It tests their fitness, their endurance, their strength, their power, their ability to think and read a race, and of course the bike handling too. And one rider who knows all about the particular demands of the Women's Cycle Classic is Sian Botley from Team Brother UK On Form. Not only has Sian finished in the top 10 at this grueling race, but its challenging lanes are literally her home roads.
Form is obviously important, but you definitely cannot just turn up being strong. You need to have the technical nous to be able to get through the off-road sectors. And it really, really does help knowing the course as well. I consider myself quite lucky that it is a lot of my home training roads. Obviously, the off-road sectors are really important, and they can be decisive. Punctures, crashes, anything can happen, but it definitely shouldn't be underestimated the importance of all the roads around it. Like you said, a lot of it is so narrow. There's only kind of one or two stretches of road that are kind of wider than just a single carriageway. And yeah, with 140 riders on roads that narrow, it's always going to be kind of stringing out, coming back together. It's always a very attritional race. Realistically, the first off-road sector is pretty early on, and it's really quite up and down before that. So it's always super hard to start with. And yeah, just splits up so easily. And if you're not positioned well going into Euston Village the first time, you're going to struggle to come back to the front. It's probably not like anything I've ever kind of experienced in a race before. The kind of adrenaline building in the whole race, so much to concentrate on, so much to kind of get your teeth stuck into. And I think you definitely finish the race exhausted, probably more so than a lot of others. It's definitely more the kind of mental strain of it as well, because obviously the off-road sections and just the fact that it's constantly up, down, left, right. You can rarely see half a kilometre up the road because it's so kind of twisty-turny up and down. You need to be on the ball all the time. And I guess over 100K is a long time to constantly be paying attention for. The race in itself is just really special. There's so much kind of added excitement around it, and the anticipation of the overall event is just something different. And I think a lot of riders really, really kind of enjoy that. I certainly do. It's probably my favourite race on the calendar.
So a really nice summary there from Sian Phil. Strength isn't enough by itself. Intelligence, the ability to read a race, and the advantage of a little local knowledge, it seems, are all part of the package.
Yes, if you win this race, I think you get that special nod from all of the other riders who are in the scene, because it's really such a difficult race. It's technically difficult. The road conditions are difficult. You've got to have endurance, the ability to put huge power down and quickly recover. Road positioning is ever so key in amongst all of this. So local knowledge, all of these things all come into play. You've got to be the full package, in my view, to win this particular race.
It's a wonderful race for so many reasons, and not least because of the community support it enjoys. You know, much of the delay in the return to racing in this country can be accounted for by, well, you know, let's call it a certain reluctance on the part of British Cycling and other organisers concerned that they might alienate communities. But the Cycle Classic has become such a part of the fabric of life in the villages that it passes through that really wasn't a concern, as we'll hear now from Colin.
I was only discussing yesterday with someone. They were saying, how are you managing to stage a race this year when there are so many other difficulties around? And the one thing that has been absolutely amazing to us is that all the communities that we actually pass the race through, whether it be Melton Town or villages like Ouston and Somerby and places like that, there is such a strong feeling of support and movement of support for the race going ahead that it's incredible to experience it. Those communities want to see this race back on. They see it as creating some normality back into their lives of something that, you know, has been part of their lives for so many years now, and they want it to get back where it should be. And we're only too pleased and proud that we're able to do that. Bitty Cycling have been supportive to us in ensuring the road races go ahead on the basis that we want them to, as real races, not just trial events and this sort of thing. And really, it's paying off in terms of the community support that we have.
I mean, it's really heartening to hear that Colin has that support from his communities. And this is not some low-key return to racing or even a pilot event that we're discussing. Sunday's Women's Cycle Classic will start with what is generally agreed will be the largest peloton ever assembled for a domestic women's road race. Will each of the 140 starters make it back into Melton to contest the finish? Colin's not so sure.
One of the things that Bitty Cycling has said all along, they have been quite prepared for us to have the maximum field of 140 because they consider that the course is so challenging that we may start with a bunch of 140, but within perhaps the first 20 kilometres, we won't have a bunch of 140 any longer. It'll be several smaller bunches. Whether or not that actually comes to fruition, we'll have to wait and see. But it's a realistic way of looking at it. The more spread out we get the riders, then the greater the racing looks, because it actually demonstrates the real challenge of the event. But everybody wants to be in there, and they're there at the start. Let's see how many we've got at the finish. I firmly believe that the course is very straightforward, but everybody else seems to tell me that they can't understand where it goes, and they still don't know where it goes. So this year we've tweaked it a little bit in sending them in the reverse direction on the first lap from Ouston to Borough on the Hill. Over the whole of the period that we've run the Cycle Classic, this will be the first time that we've ever done that circuit in reverse. So it's a unique feature of this year's race that the women will be doing this first, and it's good that we're able to do that.
Absolutely. Kudos to Colin, Clues and everybody that assists in the organisation of this particular race, because they, I think, are really showing how you bring a community in and get them engaged in a race like this. It runs through all the villages and everybody comes out and it becomes sort of a mass participation. So it's not only great for the riders riding such a challenging and technically difficult course, but actually the encouragement that's also out is what the sport really needs right now. It needs people to be actively out there and supporting it, because then that's great for the sponsors, it's great for everybody, and the riders have got that extra few watts of energy when cheered along by crowds at the side of the road, which is absolutely wonderful. So, you know, for me, this is a real great example of how British domestic racing needs to build further with more races of this style and type.
Well, here, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, Phil. We mentioned to Colin in our interview that given that Britain already has the most respected stage race on the women's calendar in the shape of the women's tour, you know, does he see potential in the women's cycle classic to achieve the same status as a one-day race?
The potential is there, yes. There is the limitation at the moment in terms of finance and also ability to move it to another level. It would be lovely to have a women's one-day international race in this country. And I think that of all the races that are out there, I think that the Cycle Classic, as it does with the men's event, could fulfil that role. But the amount of work involved in putting that all together is possibly beyond myself at the present time. And I think that it would need others to come in and actually assist in that happening. Because although we run a very good event on that £30,000 a year budget, to actually run any international event, if you look abroad and at the budgets that people have there, then, you know, you're talking in terms of between £100,000 and £150,000 to run an event of that type at the international level. At the moment, that sort of financing is really just not available in the British circuit.
What's interesting to hear there, Phil, isn't it? The budget would be only half the issue. in making the Women's Cycle Classic an international event. The other half would be the additional drain on Colin's time. People forget, I think, just how much the British scene depends on volunteers. I mean, Colin Clues is a volunteer. Let that sink in. I mean, he's built this race from scratch over 15 years. He's made it the envy of many races in world cycling. Now, I know that Brother UK's investment is very much at the grassroots of the sport, and it's about supporting volunteers at the end of the day. I mean, they do a wonderful job, don't they? You can only take your hat off to them.
Well, the sport wouldn't function with people like Colin and all the volunteers that also help on the day and do all of the work ahead of the race. And if you talk to Colin, actually, a lot of the work that he has to do is having all of the conversations with the local authorities and the police and the road closures. Thankfully, he's built up a library of assets now, which means he can take a lot of it off the shelf and sort of repeat it year after year. But the hard work is really getting the race established for the first time. The second time, perhaps it comes a little bit easier. But obviously, Colin was also very lucky in securing somebody that financially backed getting the race set up. So somebody really put some money down, committed for 3 years, which allowed Colin to sort of go away and get it all sorted out. So now he's got a really timeless classic there in the domestic scene. So long may that continue. But I think we've heard and read in a number of articles now that absolutely what the scene needs is more race organisers, more volunteers, more committed people in order that it can continue in the years ahead.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, people with Colin's vision and determination and, you know, then incredible benefactors like Pete Stanton, who, as Colin mentions in our interview, meets the £30,000 cost of the women's race. I mean, that is extraordinary dedication and a real testament, I think, to the passion that exists in this country for bike racing.
A year or two before 2016, it had been in my mind and my wish to stage a women's version. At about that time, I think it was 2015, we decided that we'd do some crowdfunding for our men's race to enable us to have it televised, as Pity Cycling were no longer covering it live for us. One gentleman who came forward at that time was a gentleman by the name of Pete Stanton from Northampton. And Pete offered us a couple of £100 towards the crowdfunding, which we were very grateful for. But he then let slip to me in an email that he was very interested in women's racing. And to the extent that if, in fact, we could actually offer him something significant in terms of a race, he might be prepared to sponsor it for us. Never one to be slow in actually jumping at an opportunity. I went back to Pete and said, you know, well, do you mean this? It could be costly. His response was, well, put a budget together and let's see what it might be and give me the chance to say yay or nay. So I put together a budget of around £30,000, went back to Pete, and believe it or not, he immediately said, oh, if that's fine, I'm willing to sponsor the race for 3 years. Pete is an absolutely tremendous character. He is a strong supporter of women's racing and has been for many, many years. But the situation whereby somebody puts their own hand in their own pocket and comes up with £30,000 to run a race each year, yeah, I totally agree with Tim. It is absolutely unique, perhaps not just in this country either. He's well deserving of some public accolade for his generosity towards women's cycling in this country, because he is a one-off, and that's why we're also passionate to make a race for him that is worthy of what he's actually doing.
Looping back now to the planning aspect, of course, there's a huge amount of planning in putting on the race, but increasingly in the neutral service provision too. I mean, now more than ever, they're required to cope with a huge number of technical permutations, whether that be disc brakes or through axles or 12-speaker sets, tubeless tyres, I mean, you name it. It's a constantly shifting picture, isn't it?
It is, Tim. There's so many permutations now that actually we can't meet every single requirement on the road now. It's just almost impossible. We haven't got the space inside the car to fit all of the wheels, combinations, cassettes that are needed and all the various hub types and rotor sizes, etc. So you've got to sort of go with the main, really. And what Tony does a really good job of is he's got a very good relationship with the people who run the team. So Tony, you'll often find walking the pits before a race, having a chat, just quickly checking what people's setups are. And if there's a setup there that somebody does say, oh, actually what I'm running is a 140 front, you know, 160 rear through axle 12 speed, and we don't have that particular wheel on the vehicle, then Tony will ask for perhaps a spare set of wheels and he might put those in lead car one. So effectively, if that rider has probably got a good chance of being in a breakaway or even winning the race, we'll make sure those wheels are in the right vehicle in order that if there's a rapid wheel change needed, that we at least have the ability to service that rider. Now, of course, you can't suddenly then store 140 different sets of wheels for 140 different riders. So Tony needs to use his judgment, really. He knows the riders, he knows the scene, he knows who the strongest people are. And so generally speaking, he'll use his judgment, you know, when asked about whether to hold a set of riders for a wheel. And sometimes an independent might walk up and, you know, third cat and say, oh, I need these wheels in your car. And it'd be like, sorry, we don't have the room. You know, these unfortunately are some of the realities of what actually happens at some of these races. The
same occurs in pedals.
So if we don't have a wheel, then it might be, well, I'll take a bike then. The bikes are equipped with Shimano pedals and you look down and somebody's running Speed Place. And then, of course, their cleats don't fit the pedals. So by that particular time, then it's a question of, well, by the time we change the pedals, and we have done it, I have been in the car when we have changed pedals, but unfortunately, it means that that rider is probably so far away from the bunch or brake then that it's probably going to be unlikely they're going to get back on. So it's very, very fluid, Tim. It's very, very fluid. And neutral service is not the answer to every single technical query that arises on the road in a race, but it can answer most.
They do a tremendous job, but of course that's a shared responsibility, you know, it's shared with every team in the race. The chief mitigation strategy that Tony deploys, well, that's taking three cars. He's got one stationed behind the chief commissaire, he has one stationed in the middle of the pack, and he has one stationed at the back of the pack for riders who fall out of it. And we can expect to see that on Sunday. It's such an attritional race. Just while we're discussing the cars, Phil, it's probably worth mentioning that these are brand new vehicles that will make their race debut on Sunday. You negotiated a new deal with Ford, I think.
Yes, we've had the cars now on the fleet for about 9 months, Tim. But obviously, because of COVID, they haven't seen any racing action. But yes, we struck a new sponsorship deal with Ford and we've got the cars sent away, got them fully wrapped, got the racks readjusted. And we had a reassessment of all, as usual, all the technical equipment that needs to be in the cars, which we do at the end of every season. We double check what new wheel sets we might need to put on. We've, for example, put more disc wheels on the roofs nowadays, obviously as rim is being transitioned out more. We've got drills, as Tony discussed, put drills into the cars now to try and make sure that the wheel changes, if it is a through axle disc setup, that we can try and get those wheels changed as quickly as possible. So we're always trying to mitigate wherever we can. But I guess, as I said before, you can't answer every single technical malfunction on the road, and particularly if the race is on and it's in its final third and somebody has a technical query right at the back in perhaps a gruppetto that then says, well, actually, I've got a technical problem and I want you to resolve it. If they've no chance of actually, you know, being in the top 10 or top 20, that it might well be that that service is not given at that particular time, because actually they've got no chance of actually finishing the race in any sort of point-earning ranking.
But that is another compelling aspect of the Cycle Classic, isn't it? It's a race that, on the one hand, is heavily dependent on luck, and on the other, it's a race that never produces a lucky winner. You know, nobody wins a race as demanding as the Cycle Classic out of sheer good fortune. But let's hear again now from Team Brother UK OnForm's Sean Botley.
The luck element does play a part of it, but I'm quite a firm believer in you make your own luck in races like this. And if you have got the kind of extra technical ability to be able to pick your way through the tricky sections, then yeah, you are less likely to run into trouble. My dad grew up in Oakham, which is obviously really close to the race. He knows the roads like the back of his hands, so he'll always kind of razz around in the car with spare wheels, and it's definitely the best strategy, I think, should you puncture in the middle of the sector. There's no point in waiting for the cars behind, because there's just going to be such a massive kind of string of riders that are spread out all over the place, and then a number of cars. So if you can get yourself to the end of the sector to then pick up a wheel if dad's there. It's it's definitely the best thing to do, I think. We've got a recce ride planned in. I'm not sure if dad is going to ride with us or come in the car behind, but yeah, I like to think that between me and especially him, we can impart plenty of local knowledge onto my teammates.
It was interesting earlier, Phil, you know, when you described the list of qualities that a rider might need to be successful in a race like this, you mentioned local knowledge, and that's something that Sian and indeed Team Brother UK On Form can definitely call upon. In those clips there, she mentioned her father, which of course is Mark Botley, the team manager, and he will be calling the shots for Team Brother UK On Form on Sunday. So, you know, perhaps that will give them an advantage. Larry Hickmott, founder and editor of Brother UK, sponsor Velo UK, well, he certainly believes so. And although surprisingly, this will be the first edition of the Women's Cycle Classic that he'll cover, he's covered countless editions of the men's race, and he is more than familiar with the decisive sections of the course. I asked him if local knowledge could deliver an advantage.
I think it would have to deliver a big advantage, because you take the section over Marefield, which is where the QOM, or the King of the Hills, or the Queen of the Hills, the sprint is, they take that in a different direction this time, for the first time ever. So knowing how those roads are going to affect the race is very important. So I think a recce, if riders aren't out looking at the course and are just going to take it as it comes, I think that would be the wrong strategy to take. I think you need to know what's coming to be able to know when to be in position, because it only takes one person or two people to let a wheel go and gaps to open up. And it's such a hard course, I think it's going to be quite difficult for riders to close those gaps.
So both Sian and Larry, very clear there, Phil. Home roads definitely deliver an advantage.
Oh, without a doubt. I think any rider will tell you when they're riding on their home roads, it sort of gives them an extra advantage. Road positioning, knowing what's coming ahead, where you need to be, moving up the bunch where you can, knowing that parkour, knowing everything about the twists and turns should enable Sian to ride, I hope, a smart and efficient race, minimizing any energy output, making sure that her tire pressures are right, and also her bunch positioning is really on point. So I think in a race like this, that local knowledge is really a great advantage.
Absolutely. I mean, Sian will definitely hope to be at the sharp end of the women's race on Sunday, but she'll be far from the only rider from a Brother UK sponsored team looking to shape the race. Lucy Lee of Team Brother UK LDN and Sammy Stewart of Brother UK sponsored Crimson Performance Orientation Marketing are both in outstanding form, and both will be making their debuts. I think it's probably fair to say that neither of them are the only card that their respective teams will have to play this weekend. I don't think any of Brother's teams will be travelling to Leicestershire with the idea of making up the numbers this weekend, Phil.
Without a doubt, they have a very, very strong squad of riders in each of the teams. When you look at that size of the group, I mean, there's 140 riders going to be participating in the race on Sunday, which makes that also the largest race perhaps that's ever been run at Cycle Classic with a number of riders, which again creates a new complication. That's a much longer bunch. On the narrow roads, it's even more strung out. It's the first race back. There's different people with competing aims. It's going to be very, very strategic and very much probably a race of attrition as it carries on. So I know that each of our sponsor teams, and any of the teams, honestly speaking, that are there, they want to put a good show on, because there's only going to be a couple of opportunities in these National A races in 2021. Kudos to be had. Everyone wants to show their form. Everyone wants to show the sponsors and the managers that they're here, they're well-trained, they're well-prepared, and they want to perform. So I think we can expect a lot of fireworks on Sunday.
Now, if you're unable to make the journey to Leicestershire this weekend, here's some good news. Larry Hickmott of VeloUK.net will be covering the race, diving from lane to lane on his Brother-branded motorbike and posting images and video to his Twitter account at VeloUK. Phil, will you be heading along this weekend?
Tim, I've had this race in my diary for months. Until last week, my son called and said he needed to be moved home from university in Hull. On what day? Next Sunday. Literally, I'm like, can it be no other day, son? I really want to try and get down for this race. Dad, it's got to be Sunday. So unfortunately, I can't make it. I'm absolutely gutted.
Ah, well, all the more reason to follow at Velo UK on Twitter. I mean, we say this again and again, but it's no more than the truth. Larry is the hardest working man in cycling, I mean, where would this scene be without him, Phil? He covers literally every race, it seems.
I know Larry, he's already done his sort of pre-race work. I know he will have figured out where he's going to be, where the best photos will be. And thank goodness we're going to have Larry there reporting on the action. You know, he'll be on his brother-sponsored motorbike, so look out for him as he's creating dust around the lanes there and pointing his lens in all the right places. But without a doubt, Larry making a massive contribution. And I know he will be excited to be covering this race on Sunday.
Well, it's the biggest race that we've had for well over a year. There's a lot of pressure and a lot of different things to cover. Obviously, on the Saturday, I will cover the course in the manner that I will cover it on the Sunday, just to check everything on the motorbike. On the Sunday, I have two races. Now, normally, when we do the Cycle Classic, we only have one race. So to have two races makes it an extremely busy and extremely long day. This race for the juniors and the race for the women's, unlike the men's, everything is packed into a very short distance of 100 kilometres. So therefore, timing and running around will be the order of the day. As you say, it's a very photogenic race. Sommerberg is an obvious one, whether you photograph it from the front or behind. It's always a great looking shot to have. And Sawgate, which is the last sector that the riders in this race do before the finish. It's just a straight gravel road with a lot of potholes that the riders are doing at speeds that I think would surprise a lot of people. That is always an epic photograph. But there are other photographs. There's one near Sommerberg where the race dips down into the bottom of the hills and then back up again. And a snaking peloton of 140 riders is always a nice shot. I have already looked at the course thanks to the help from Colin Clues, and I do have a strategy of the number of times that I can see the race, which I think is roughly 7 to 8 times, and then get back for the finish.
Well, I hope we've managed to whet your appetite for this Sunday's return to national road racing. The Cycle Classic is just one of those races that everybody looks forward to every year. On the World Tour calendar, it's Strade Bianche and Paris-Roubaix. And on the domestic calendar, it's the Lincoln Grand Prix and, of course, the Cycle Classic. To relaunch national racing in this country with such a charismatic race, well, couldn't really ask for more. If you're unable to attend, then do make sure you're following at VeloUK and at Brother Cycling on Twitter this weekend, where we'll bring you as much information as we possibly can. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. Thank you to all of our guests, and most of all, thank you very much for everybody listening out there. Do please stay safe.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.